Good morning. It's been a very good morning so far. I really enjoyed the Bible class with all of you and the songs that Mike just led with us. We're going to be talking about the monthly theme or the yearly theme this Sunday morning. At the beginning of the year, we've been looking at once a month different disciplines of the Christian life. And really the premise of all of these lessons is that in the beginning, in Genesis chapter 1, God created human beings in the image of Him, in the image of God. And what that means is that we were made to reflect God. In the Greek Septuagint of the Old Testament translation, the word that it uses for being made in God's image is that we're made in God's icon. And all of us have got smartphones probably, and we have icons on our phones. And the icon of the phone, that, like if you've got the F on there for Facebook, you press on the icon and then it opens up something greater than the icon itself. The idea is that the icon points to something beyond itself. And our mission, the purpose that we were created, was to point people to God and to help people understand God's character. Now, the problem with that, of course, is sin. When sin entered the world, it ruptured our purposes. It's like marring what we were always supposed to be. So the question is, how do we get back to be restored to really reflect God's character? How does that happen? Throughout the Bible, many times you'll see sin compared to slavery. And tomorrow we're going to be celebrating the 4th of July, the freedom that we have in this nation. There's a deeper freedom that matters more than our circumstances and what nation we live in. The deepest kind of freedom that matters the most is whether or not I'm free from the bondage of sin. And the question is, how do we get this healthy spiritual life where we're not planning our schedule around various different kinds of sins and we can't seem to control ourselves in the moment of temptation? If you want the freedom of a healthy marriage, it demands discipline. If you want the freedom of a healthy body, it demands discipline. If you want the freedom of being a really great musician, it demands discipline. And it demands that you give up certain things in order to get that freedom. To get the freedom of a healthy spiritual life requires disciplines. And here's some of the disciplines that we've looked at this year. We've talked about study, meditation, prayer, fasting, joy. This morning we're going to look at the discipline of discernment. And to introduce this concept, I'm going to put several statements on the PowerPoint. And as I put these up there, I just want you to think about your reaction to them. Here's the first one. I need to forgive myself. Second one, I need more self-confidence. Third one, I need to be true to myself. Fourthly, my body is a temple, so I eat healthy. Now, I'm going to say at the beginning, I've made comments like this before. But I'm also going to say that there's something wrong with all of these statements. And it scares me when we don't immediately see what's wrong with some of these statements. And it worries me when Christians say these kinds of things. This shows us why this discipline of discernment is so critical. Now, are there shades of truth to some of these things? Kind of. Yes, sort of. But the way that a lot of people use these statements runs very counter to what the Bible teaches about all of these areas. So as we approach this discipline of discernment, I'm going to approach it from these three angles. We're going to ask three questions. First of all, what is discernment? Secondly, why does discernment matter? And thirdly, how can I develop discernment? So what is it, why does it matter, and how can I develop it? Let's start out with what is discernment. Now, in the Old and New Testament, there's different Hebrew words that are translated as discernment, and in the Greek New Testament, there's different words that are translated for discernment and other synonyms as well. In the Hebrew, the word for discernment is bin, and there's a lot of other words that are similar to it. It's used around 247 times in the Old Testament. And the idea of this word means to separate mentally. It means that you're looking at several different things or one thing and you're able to kind of slice it down the middle and parse it out in a certain kind of way where you can separate one thing from the other. But notice that this is a mental discipline. This is first of all a mental thing. So it begins in the mind, and here's one place where this word is used in the Old Testament. Deuteronomy chapter 1 verse 13. It says, choose for your tribes wise understanding. That's the word. Understanding and experienced men, and I will appoint them as your heads. So this is when the Israelites are choosing, historically, when they had leaders for the nation, they had to choose people that had discernment. So this is an important character quality for people who are in positions of leadership. So that's the Hebrew word. And it's also translated as understanding or distinguishing in the Old Testament. All right, the New Testament words are diakrino or dakamatzo or something like that. You Greek people can probably tell me how to pronounce that better later. But this is, again, the same kind of concept. This, in the New Testament, it means to learn by discrimination and to scrutinize and to test something. So discrimination, by the way, that's something that we're actually commanded to do here. We're supposed to discriminate, and that's not in the negative sense. That just means to make a decision between two things, to be able to separate something out. Now, there are certain times where this word is used in the New Testament in a positive way, and other times in a negative way. For example, Acts 15:9, where it's talking about Jews and Gentiles learning to work together, and they're all accepted. It says in Acts 15:9, and he made no distinction between us, that's the Jews, and them, that's the Gentiles, having cleansed their hearts by faith. The no distinction there, God made no discrimination between Jew and Gentile. So there's times where you do discriminate, and there's other times where you don't, but the concept is that you are parsing out, you're separating things. Now we can see just from the definitions that all of us already do this to a degree, right? When we go to the grocery store, we're trying to figure out what are the rotten apples and what are the ripe apples. If we go to a grocery store and we pay with cash and we give them a $50 bill, what do they do with it? They hold it up to the light and they're trying to discriminate. Is this a real bill or is this a fake bill? With Asher, we're teaching him the differences of animals so he can separate the different kinds of animals there are. We already do this to a degree. So when we talk about the biblical concept or the biblical discipline of discernment, what is it applying to in this case? 1 John 4:1 says, beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test. That's the same concept. Test or discern the spirits to see whether they are from God. For many false prophets have gone out into the world. So here when John is writing this and he says, test the spirits, he's talking about the different ideas or the different concepts or the different false teachers that are out and about teaching various things. Here John is saying, you've got to test them. You've got to scrutinize them. You've got to think deeply about the things that you're hearing. And this is talking about truth or false concepts. So this discipline of discernment is so that I can weed out false ideas and get true ideas into my heart. And maybe another way that we could say it is that it's getting God's thoughts and ideas into my head. That's the discipline of discernment. Now I want us to think for a moment, what are some of the spirits in our culture? And by spirits, that's just another way of saying avenues through which we get taught different things. Here's a list. Books, blogs, articles, commentaries, sermons, even from this pulpit, radio, video games, news, inspirational speakers, advice from friends or parents. All of these are different things that can be used for very good things or very bad things. And all of us are inundated with these things throughout the week. The biblical discipline of discernment means that as I'm reading these things, as I'm taking these things in, I'm learning how to separate and parse out what's true, what's not true. Some people have used the phrase before, to eat the meat and throw away the bones. Take what's good and throw away the bad. That's the concept of discernment. And something that is important to notice about this is that as we start to scrutinize these things in a gentle, loving kind of way, Do you know what people will start to think about us sometimes? You're kind of narrow-minded. But that's not very loving of you to think that that wasn't good advice, or that's not really worth listening to. And so people will start to look at you and say, well, you don't really fit in with what everybody else around you is doing because you're maybe a little bit more thoughtful, and that bothers some people. Now, take a look at 1 Thessalonians 5, 20 and 21. It says, do not despise prophecies, but test everything, hold fast what is good. So I want you to imagine that you're the church in Thessalonica, and you've received this letter, and we know at the end of the letter that this would have been read out loud to the whole church. That would have been like the sermon for the day. So somebody gets up with this scroll, and towards the end of this letter, the person that's writing it says these words. Who does this apply to? Everybody in the church is told in verse 21 to test everything and to hold fast to that which is good. We learn from this that this is a responsibility of all Christians. We don't rely on certain people in a local church to be the discerners for us. We can certainly learn from them and learn discernment from other people and be helped in that way. But this is something that all Christians are supposed to be growing in. And we see from this what the purpose of discernment is. It's to hold fast what is good. Again, think about going to the grocery store and you're going to pick out some avocados or some pineapples or something like that. Why is it that people are scrutinizing and discriminating the poor fruit? It's because you know that when you buy it, it's going to end up going into your body. And you want to put good stuff in your body. It's not like you're discriminating the fruit because you just really enjoy being discriminatory and you like being above the fruit. That's not the idea. When it comes to the discipline of discernment, the reason that we're parsing out different concepts is not so that we can feel superior. It's so that we take the right ideas and put it into us so that it leads to life transformation. Because if we're not able to discern and we take in false ideas, well, what happens when you eat rotten fruit? It's not good for you, right? What happens when you eat uncooked chicken? It's not good for you. What happens when you don't discern between truth and falsehood? And you put it into you, you end up getting angry about things you shouldn't get angry about. It affects everything about you in ways that you don't always know how to trace back to the root cause. So that's what discernment is. Now, here's the question. Why does discernment matter? And we've already touched on it a little bit, but go to Hebrews chapter 5. Hebrews chapter 5 is a text written, the whole book of Hebrews is written to Jewish Christians, and they were getting persecuted for their faith. And because the heat was starting to get hotter and hotter for them in terms of their persecution, they were thinking about giving up on their faith. And all of this was affecting their discernment and their growth. And this passage in Hebrews chapter 5, we're going to look at verses 11 through 14, is written to a group of people that were not growing in their discernment. And it explains for us why discernment matters. So look at Hebrews chapter 5, verses 11 to 14. About this we have much to say, and it is hard to explain, since you have become dull of hearing. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the basic principles of the oracles of God. You need milk, not solid food. For everyone who lives on milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness since he is a child. But solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. So you'll see in verse 14, the writer talks about solid food being for people who are mature, that have their spiritual senses of discernment trained by all of that. And so what do we see in this text that shows us why this even matters? The first thing that we see about in this text about why discernment matters is because it measures my maturity. My ability to discern truth from error is a barometer for my spiritual maturity. In verse 11, The problem with these people is that they had become dull of hearing. Now, that doesn't mean that they were stupid. That's not their problem. It doesn't mean that they were intellectually unable to grasp things because they didn't have the capacity to understand things. That concept of them being dull of hearing means that they had become slothful in their study. They had become slothful and lazy in their spiritual disciplines, and so because of that, the writer wants to be able to say some things about Melchizedek that he can't quite fully say everything about. And so in this text, the writer is saying that you guys need milk and not solid food. When Asher was starting to get on to solid food, we'd try it, and then if he didn't seem to be able to get it, we had to go back to the milk, and then maybe a week later we'd try it again, and we'd see a little bit of progress. But the idea of somebody who's growing, it implies that you're able to get to a point where you start having solid food. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, you guys are like babies. Like every time you get together, it's like you have to be spoon-fed and you have to be fed from a bottle because meaty things can't be given to you since you don't have the powers of discernment trained to be able to figure those things out. Now try to imagine that a child always wanted to have milk. Would you feel bad for that kid? This is why I would feel bad for that kid, because you're missing out on some really good food like carne asada and burritos and even fried beans. Like, you're missing out on asparagus. If it's done right, it's really good. You're missing out on all kinds of really good food, but you can't take it in. Have you ever been in a situation before where somebody wants to study the Bible and somebody immediately says, oh, I want to study James, for example. Oh, why do you want to study James? Because I've studied it before and I really like it. Now, there's nothing wrong with the book of James, but the writer is saying you need to move beyond the milk. You need to get to a point where you're challenging yourself so that you can move to solid food. And if physically speaking, you're just having milk and you're missing out on all kinds of good physical food, would it not be the case that if you're just sticking with the basics, that you're missing out on all kinds of awesome things that God has revealed in His Word? And by the way, the kinds of things that the Hebrew Christians here were missing out on were things that could save their soul. Concepts that would help save their soul because they're in danger of falling away. What kinds of things could we be missing out on if we're immature and not discerning, not able to figure out, okay, what's true, what's not true, how can I get to the deeper things? If I'm not discerning, the Bible teaches that I'm not mature. That's the first reason that it matters. Second reason that it matters is because it protects me from evil. Look at verse 14 again. It says, but solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. Again, that's the concept of discernment, distinguishing between good and evil. This discipline allows me to be able to distinguish good from bad things. When I was a child, we had rats in our house, and my mom would put rat pellet poison things all over the house. And there was one day when I came up to some of the rat pellets, and I ate some of them. And I think I was probably 3 years old or so. And my mom came up to me after figuring out what happened, and she said, how many did you eat? And I said, just two. And she called the paramedic people or whatever. They came out with the syrup of Ipecac, and they made me throw it up. But I was young and immature, and hopefully by now I've understood that I can't eat that. But immature people can't distinguish between things that they physically should eat or shouldn't eat. Kids put all kinds of things in their mouth that they shouldn't put in their mouth. The undiscerning person puts all kinds of false concepts into their heart that shouldn't be there. For example, Ephesians 3, 13 and 14 says, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, we have the concept of maturity again, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, so that we may no longer be children tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness and deceitful schemes. You notice in this text that there is in existence lies and deceits. Cunning is what it says. 2 Corinthians teaches us that Satan himself disguises himself as an angel of light. So these false ideas that are propagated through all of these different things that we can listen to, they don't come across immediately as being wrong. They come across as being reasonable and philosophical and sophisticated. And here it says that the undiscerning person, this concept of immaturity, that as we continue to grow, we're not tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine. Shortly after I became a Christian, I had some friends that were part of a false religion. And I talked to the dad who was like the family shepherd of that false religion. He just drilled it into the heads of the kids. And we talked for about 3 hours. And I had probably been a Christian for about, I would say, 4 months. And after talking to him for 3 hours, do you suppose that I started to wonder if I was wrong? I was immature. Because all of these ideas that this guy was explaining to me sounded very reasonable. And they sounded very good, but to an immature person like myself, that caused me to be tossed to and from with the waves. Now, the goal of discernment, the goal of becoming mature, is that rather than being like a paddle boat in the middle of the ocean, I can become like a giant warship where giant waves won't cause me to tip. If I'm not growing in my discernment, I'm just like the person at the grocery store that can't choose between ripe fruit and rotten fruit, and I'm eating the rotten fruit. And it's going to destroy my soul. Third reason why it matters in this text is because discernment enables me to teach other people. Now, I don't know how long these people had been Christians, but in this text, it was long enough where the writer could say to them, some of you ought to be teachers by now, but you've been so fixated on the milk that you haven't gotten to the point of being able to grow where you can dispense the information to other people. If you go to, well, let me say it this way. What's the connection between my discernment, my ability to separate truth from error, and me being able to teach? I want you to imagine for a moment that you go to a 5-star restaurant and the cook that's making your food, do you think he has the ability to taste things? I sure hope he can. Because if the cook can't taste himself, how does he know if he's dispensing food that's good? Now, maybe you can do some Google search and find some guy that doesn't have any sense to taste, but he still makes good food, but that's going to be far and few between. If I can sense and I can taste the things that are true, then I'm able to dispense it to other people because I first tasted it and now I can tell you about it. Here's a test. If someone were to ask you why baptism is necessary, would you be able to explain it? If someone were to ask you why you trust the Bible, would you be able to explain why? If someone were to ask you why our local church doesn't use instruments in worship, would you be able to explain that to somebody? If somebody was to ask you what repentance is, would you be able to explain what that means? And I'm going to suggest that with any of those questions, if you couldn't explain that to somebody, you are unskilled in the Word of God. You just are. And there's reason to be concerned about your ability to discern. Now, why does teaching matter? Why is it that I should pursue this discipline so that I can teach? Think about that from a couple angles. Households that have children. Do those households need to be teaching their children the Word? Does that fall on the parents to be able to do that? To be able to dispense the information? Parents need to be able to discern so that they can teach kids the right things. What about lost people in the community? Are there lost people in the community that want to know about God? Of all the people in the community who should know how to discern, it should be Christians. And we have the mission of seeking the welfare of the city, like we talked about in Jeremiah 29 in our class this morning, where we should be able to dispense that information. What about in a local church? One of the markers of a healthy church is more and more men able to teach and willing to teach. And the more people that can do that, the better that is. By the way, if we're going to talk about how we develop discernment in just a moment. But one of the best ways to develop discernment is to start teaching. If you start doing it, you start learning how to discern truth from error in a deeper way than you've seen before. So, all right, that's why discernment matters. Let's talk thirdly about how we develop it. After we've talked about what it is, why it matters, perhaps some of us have a greater desire to grow in this area. What does the Bible teach us about how we can grow in this discipline? The first suggestion would be to examine my will. And what I mean by that is examine what really matters to me the most. And this is the most foundational thing to this. In John chapter 7, Jesus, during the Feast of Booths, is at the temple, and he's teaching, and people are wondering, how did this guy get this teaching? He's never gone to seminary before. He had never sit with the greatest teachers of the law. He had never learned from all of those people. So how does he get all this wisdom? And Jesus says in John 7, verses 16 and 17, so Jesus answered them, my teaching is not mine, but his who sent me. If anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching is from God or whether I am speaking on my own authority. Look what he's saying here. If your will, if your greatest desire is to do God's desires, you will figure out and you'll be able to discern. That doesn't mean it's just going to be zapped into you. But somebody who, for example, really wants to learn how to do some skill, like play tennis, really, really well, if that's really their desire, they'll figure out all the nuances to how to do it. If your desire is really to please God, you'll learn how to discern truth from error. And here's maybe some examples of why this is the case. When I was preaching in Minnesota, in Rochester, there's this bookstore, a Christian bookstore in town, and I used to go there and look at the clearance book section. And it's no wonder why this book was a clearance book. But I picked up this book, and it was about Christians and wealth. And here is the thesis, the premise of the book, that Jesus wants you to be physically wealthy. And here, now, start out with this. If my will is to be extraordinarily physically wealthy, if that's my desire, think about how I would not be able to discern truth from error as I'm reading that book. So here's one of the arguments in the book. Jesus wants you to be wealthy because Jesus and his disciples had a money bag. There you go. Now, if my will is to be wealthy, will I be able to discern truth from error in that case? Nope. That'll sound like a good argument to me. But if my will is to please God, then I'll see immediately there's something wrong with that. There are people that are offended at the Old Testament. The book of Joshua, that deals with the conquest in Canaan, because their will is all about politics. If the thing that I'm most engaged in and the thing that matters to me the most is politics, Joshua will offend me terribly. But the person who desires to do God's will more than anything else and care about God more than politics, they'll be able to look at a book like Joshua and go, that was God's will. He was fighting sin. That's what he was doing. That's how that works. Now, that's one way to develop discernment, is to examine my will. What is it that I really want in this life? If I want my own praise and honor and glory, and I'm self-centered, there will be all kinds of new age of advice that will sound good to me that I will not be able to discern because I care too much about myself and not God. That's the first thing. Here's the second thing to develop discernment is prayer. Solomon in the Old Testament, when he prayed for wisdom, look at how it's worded. 1 Kings 3:9, give your servant therefore an understanding, that's the word for discernment, give him an understanding mind to govern your people that I may discern between good and evil, for who is able to govern this your great people? This is his prayer. God comes to him in this dream and he says, ask whatever you want and it'll be given to you. And here's Solomon already having a dose of wisdom because this is what he asks for. And when he asks for this, how does God respond in the next verse? 1 Kings 3:10, it pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this. It pleased God. Now, can you imagine if God invited you and said, ask whatever you want, and it'll be given you. And he asked for wisdom, and he's given it by the truckload. That same promise is given to us in James 1:5. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given. This verse has always been comforting to me. When I was in elementary school, I've always been a slow learner, I think. And when I was in elementary school, I had teachers that would try to explain an assignment to me. And they would explain it to me one time, and then I'd have to ask them again because I just didn't get it. And it wasn't because I wasn't listening to them. And then they'd explain it to me again, and then I'd ask them a third and sometimes even a fourth time. And by the third or fourth time, can you imagine the look on their faces? Don't you get it? What's wrong with you? Look at this text. If you lack wisdom, God will give you generously without reproach. He's not going to look at you and go, again? You're asking for wisdom again? He says he'll keep giving it generously. That's God's character. If Asher really wanted asparagus, which he really likes, by the way, Samantha and I are eager to give it to him because we know it's good for him. If you're eager for something that God is pleased for you to have, do you not think he would answer that prayer? I don't know how all the ways that he answers that prayer would be. But I do know one of the ways that we develop discernment is to pray for it. And the Bible makes that promise to us. Okay, the third way that we grow in discernment is challenging Bible study. I say challenging for a reason. Many of us have heard the analogy before, and I talked about this earlier, about how people discern what counterfeit money is as opposed to the real McCoy. They figure it out, not by studying all of the false counterfeit money, because that's always changing. And they would spend all their time doing that, they'd never know what the real stuff looked like anyways. So we've all heard that analogy before. Let me switch the analogy a little bit so we can think about it in a fresh way. Imagine that you know a 5-year-old. And the 5-year-old comes up to you and says, hey, whatever your name is, I want to learn about all of the animals that live in the ocean. And you say, okay, let's learn about all the animals that live in the ocean. First of all, by studying all the animals that don't live in the ocean. Does that make sense to you? Once the kid starts to understand what kind of animals live in the ocean, there's ones that have fins and scales, and they kind of have a certain look, where as soon as they see a zebra, they know that the zebra doesn't belong in there because they've discerned through their discipline that there's certain kinds of characteristics for animals that live in the ocean. Now imagine the kid said, I want to be able to explain to everybody else all the animals that live in the ocean. Would you then say, okay, let's study all the ones that are not in the ocean? You wouldn't do that. You'd say, okay, let's look at all the animals then. Okay, how is it that sometimes in Bible classes, what do people sometimes want to study? What do all the denominations teach? What are all the animals that don't belong in the ocean so we can figure out the animals that live in the ocean? What? That doesn't make sense. I'm not saying there are never times when we're studying the scripture to say, by the way, a lot of people have misused this verse because of X, Y, or Z. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that if we want to be able to develop discernment, we're not going to be doing it by studying all the things that are wrong. As we study the right thing, we can immediately see what the wrong thing is. Now, how do we do this, though? One of the reasons that we've been blessed with a community of Christians is so we can study together. Our Bible classes are so that we can sharpen each other's understanding, and I can learn from the way that you discern, and that person can teach the other person how they discern. One of my favorite things after I became a Christian in Minnesota, there's a group of about probably 5 or 6 really strong in their young, like upper teenage years, early 20s, that studied the Bible a lot. And all of us were new Christians. And here's what we did. We got together and we studied the Bible together, and nobody was the official teacher. We would just read a passage, a paragraph at a time, and say, well, what did you notice? What did you notice? I don't know if that's right because of X, Y, or Z. And we sharpened each other by challenging each other with questions that weren't just pat answers to things. It wasn't just rehearsing the things that we had heard before. It was growing into deeper knowledge. And as we did that, we were training our ability to discern. When we study, do we just give pat answers? And do we just rehearse things that we've heard before? Or are we digging deeper and challenging ourselves so that our ability to discern can grow? Challenging Bible study is the third way that this grows. Now, there's one story that we have in the New Testament of Jesus when he was 12 years old. And that story when Jesus was 12 is in Luke chapter 2. And it's when Jesus was in the temple and his parents left and they didn't realize that he stayed at the temple. That text begins and ends with a very interesting comment. At the beginning of that passage in Luke 2:40, it says, "And the child grew and became strong, filled with wisdom, and the favor of God was upon him." And then you get that story, and then right after that story, Luke 2:52, "And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man." Jesus himself became a human. And he went through this discipline of discernment. He grew in this. And in that text in Luke 2, he's listening to the teachers and asking them questions. You know how you grow in discernment? You listen and you ask questions. And Jesus did that, apparently from ages 12 to 30. And because of that, he was able to confront the religious teachers of the day. He was able to have the strength to endure the cross. He was able to have the strength to endure the temptations of Satan because he had trained his discipline of discernment. Because he did that, he can be your Savior. Will we grow in our discernment so that we can separate truth from error and so that we can be people in our communities who help others know the Lord? If you're subject to the invitation, this is an opportunity for any of us in this room this morning to become a Christian. If there's anybody here that needs to develop this discernment, this is an opportunity for us to start to think about how we can do that. If you have any needs whatsoever, please come forward while we stand and while we sing.